This summer, I'm taking a new approach to styling the smallest spaces in my house with help from Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has the small space solutions that America's waited 250 years for, like retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, dinner party ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish spacious Bobopedic sofas, and feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back in even the smallest rooms. Plus, I know that Bob's styles are backed by thousands of real five-star customer reviews, so I can trust that the furniture that I'm getting is not just affordable, but built to last. And the best part? Bob's furniture ships fast, so I can enjoy my new styles all summer long. So when you're ready to ditch the furniture you're not excited about for the latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Hello, hello, our unhinged friends. I'm Jenny, a reality TV producer in Los Angeles.
And I'm Sam, a psychotherapist in New York City. We're best friends and Bravo super fans.
And we're here to take you behind the scenes into the minds and lives of your favorite reality TV stars.
This is Unhinged.
And on camera.
We're back again, and we have another special guest this week. The double therapist worked so well at our last podcast that, you know, we're going to try it again, and we need it for this topic as we get into Real Housewives of Rhode Island. Sam is here with me.
Hi, y'all.
And our second therapist, our guest today, is Elizabeth Ham, and she has a podcast called I Needed This, and her Instagram handle is Martini Talk. She does a lot of Bravo on there. And then TikTok is Elizabeth Ham, NYC Therapist.
Hi, everybody. TikTok and social media has been a lot of fun because I love Bravo, and obviously I love therapy and mental health. So making videos to kind of understand the patterns and the themes, what I found is a lot of it resonates with people. They have friendship struggles, relationship struggles. So we're able to talk about some of those themes or patterns so that it's a little bit like can break it down and say, like, am I doing that in my own life? Because I think reality TV is really polarizing. People have a lot of reactions either because you've been through something like it or you feel similar to them. So that's been a lot of fun. But outside of social media, I own my own practice. Typically work with men and women in their 20s and their 30s who are navigating big life transitions. So kind of similar population probably who watches the reality TV side of it too, which has been nice.
That's awesome. Two New York City therapists we have here. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I love what you're saying, Elizabeth, around like how I think part of what people resonate and what makes reality TV so like people get into these like binaries with it and feel so torn and feel so is like there's so much like what in therapy we call a counter transference, yeah, where we're like projecting our own stuff and then like taking on stuff based on like what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And so like I one of the reasons I was drawn to your content was I loved how you were breaking it down and bringing in sort of different psychological frameworks to help people kind of understand what, mm-hmm, is happening on like on the other levels, or whether it's implicit or explicit, like what is going on. And yeah, I like, mm-hmm, I like people who are doing that. So
yeah, thank you. And I like love that you guys are doing this. This is like the perfect mix of everything we love about it.
How you feel like people are responding to your content? Like, what do you feel like the feedback you're getting is?
I feel it mostly positive, mostly people curious, asking questions, wanting to kind of understand more. I have had a few people have really polarizing reactions. I did Southern Charm and went into Craig a little bit and had lots of defenders in the comments coming after me. But I try, you know, I'm not here to diagnose. We understand like the show's edited. I'm just like going off what we're seeing. And mm-hmm, I feel like a lot of young people watch these shows and wanting to highlight like what's healthy communication, what's unhealthy communication, what to look out for, what may be problematic, and we sweep it under the rug. So sometimes people don't like when I call those things out, but I gotta.
What was specifically about Craig that I guess upset people that you said?
I think he just has like
Jenny's
a lot
about to get activated.
No, I'm just like really curious.
I just think he has a lot of like long-term fans, and I like Craig too, but I think this season, we were really seeing kind of how he avoids accountability sometimes, a lot of times.
Well, it was interesting you said, like, sweep things under the rug, because when I think of him and Paige, that's such a good description of, like, how he handled that entire relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, he was literally like, I want to get married and have kids with you tomorrow. And she was like, yeah, I don't even know if I like you. And yeah. He was like, okay, so that seems like something we can work out in the future for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Paige might have liked a few of my videos about Craig. So I'm like, you know what? I'm on the right side of history here.
I was going to ask if you've had any Bravo people reach out or interact with you.
Yeah, Paige has liked a few things. I did a recap. A rewatch of Jersey Shore, JWoww, who was like, love the support, because I was like, JWoww really is that girl. I had Kyle comment on something. So it is, Lisa Barlow, I didn't know I was going to get there, you know, but it is kind of interesting to be like, wow, yes, they might be able to see this too.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. What was the Kyle and what was the Lisa Barlow?
I was saying something about Lisa and Heather's friendship, that they have an interesting dynamic. Like, Heather is always trying to, like, seek Lisa's approval. And I think that's why they were having, like, this big blow up this last season. And Lisa commented something like, the person who lives the real reality does not agree with this. And I was like, okay, yeah, like, the show might be edited. I don't know. I'm just going off of what I'm seeing. And then I made a comment about the Kyle Street interview, because there was like a conspiracy theory that he knew what was going on and he was working with Amanda. Not that I agreed with that, but he gave some clarification that he did not know what was going on and he was taken aback during the Street interview.
Elizabeth, I'm curious about you navigating, like, putting out these reflections. I think it's something that I kind of think about as a therapist, and like, what you think it means as far as your therapeutic practice or mm-hmm. potential conflicts of interest, right. I think that's something I get very conscientious of not wanting this to be like something that defines me with my clients you know, with self-disclosure on here, because I'm not like super dynamic where I'm like, you can't know anything about me.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very cautious about how much I share about my, like, personal self with my clients. Yeah. And here I'm pretty, you know, I'll open if it feels relevant. But yeah, I'm curious sort of like mm-hmm. what your feelings are about navigating, you know, the therapist identity versus like bringing the therapist identity to pop culture and bringing it to social media. And yeah.
No, I think it's definitely like a tricky dance. And I often, like, when I post, I am like, we have to be mindful that, like, these are real people that we're talking about. And mm-hmm. I, you know, can put all the disclaimers in the world. And that's where I'm like, I can't diagnose. I'm not, like, I don't know these people. I have to acknowledge that going off of what's edited. And I also feel like, do I want that to be my all of my identity on social media? So I make sure to, like, make other videos. I talk a lot about, like, I've navigating anxiety and depression. I feel like that is helpful. But honestly, a lot of my clients are not from social media. So it's kind of interesting that they're like, there's a whole world of me that they are like, I had no idea. But I feel like I talk about things that I know I can talk about, right? Like knowing if I don't know that dynamic, I'm not going to speak on it. Same in like therapeutic practice, right? Of like, I'm not going to pretend I know just to help you. I can help you find someone who knows that too. But I find like I kind of talk more about like attachment or self-esteem, which is a lot of what I talk about in session too. So I think that like carries over. I find myself saying, if we're talking about like a romantic relationship dynamic, is what I would be talking about with like a client who might be going through a similar situation in a relationship. So that kind of carries over. We're just now putting names to the, if that makes
sense. I love that. So do you tell your clients about your, do they know about your content?
Sometimes, like, some clients are actually trying to make content themselves. And so I'm like, girl, I've climbed Cringe Mountain too. Like, I've been here. Or if they're big reality TV fans, I'm like, I've been watching. And if you want some thoughts.
I do talk about reality TV a lot in my, like, I do this like couples supervision because I work with a lot of couples. So I'm in the supervision group. So oftentimes I'll like, we'll talk about reality as it relates to the couples we're working with.
Oh yeah, fair. Mm-hmm.
I would love, like Sam always talks about, like with the couples that we break down, it would be great in couples therapy, or I guess individual too, like watch the show and break down some of the moments.
Perfect.
And like, I almost feel like that would be a good reality show too. Well, we've been batting around, and maybe one day I'll get serious about developing it. But like this idea of like a wellness retreat with some of the most unhinged like reality Ooh. Stars, where it's like okay. there's a therapist, there's maybe, I don't know, like a life coach, there's maybe somebody else, there's like different mm-hmm. modalities to like heal this clearly broken person, and they're there okay. for like 6 weeks, and that would be cool though, like showing them actual scenes. And then I've edited a lot of therapy scenes, but I've never edited a scene where they actually showed them clips and was like, let's talk about what happened here. Like, I think that there's something very interesting about that. But anyways, yeah. speaking of, today we're going to get into Real Housewives of Rhode Island. On this podcast, we've been kind of making fun of it from the beginning because I'm from Rhode Island. So I was like, what is this Housewives edition even going to be? Turned out to be one of the best, like, additions to Bravo in a long time. I mean, for the accents alone, when I was a kid, I used to have a very thick Rhode Island accent until I moved to Florida and was literally bullied until I lost it. And sometimes I watch Alicia on the show and I'm like, maybe I would have been Alicia if I had never left Rhode Island.
Fair.
So I'm going to just jump into it and we can just start like breaking everybody down. And there was a lot of different conflicts this season. And I think they did a good job of going in and out of the conflicts without any of them kind of taking the center stage. And I think that's part of what really worked. I think the other thing that really worked is they all, a lot of them at least, had really long histories. So we got to start with, you were never homeless. You were never homeless. Also, I made my dad watch like a bunch of these episodes when he came to visit me, just out of pure torture, I guess, maybe. I don't know why I did it, but
he is a current Rhode Island resident.
Yes, okay. He is a current Rhode Island resident. And I was like, what do you think? And the one big takeaway that he was like really wanted to like get out there was that like Goddard Park is not a beach. And like, they can't believe they shot up Goddard Park. And I was like, okay, this is not interesting for my podcast, but for any Rhode Islanders, like you're seeing Goddard Park is shitty and they just set up a beach picnic there because they couldn't film anywhere else. Sorry. But anyways, he was like, I hate this. I hate these women. And I kept being like, who's your favorite? Who is your favorite? And he was like, nobody. But then I finally got him on the, you were never homeless. And I love it's like, you were never homeless. You have a beautiful family. They would never abandon you. Like, it just keeps going. Anyways, I'm going to stop because I could do this for a while. So that was a really deep fight, Alicia versus Liz. So I'll throw it to you, Sam, if you have any first thoughts, and then we'll get into this conflict.
Yeah, I guess like first thoughts, it felt to me like it was less about the homelessness and more about Liz's like perception of family and what family means to her, and how using the word homeless maybe to what I got a sense of was that for Liz, it was like, oh, you're saying people allowed you to be homeless, and that there was concern about like what that meant for family, but maybe also what it meant for Liz as someone who knew Alicia her whole life is, you know, there's a big age difference. Liz is like a, you know, the matriarch of all of these women. And so if Alicia, the one she knew the longest, was homeless at some point that Liz knew her, I wonder if there's like a thing of like, no, I'm a loyal friend. I would have never let you be homeless. Like, I wonder if it was something deeper within Liz than anything about like Alicia and Alicia's experience.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, just to throw in a little bit of context, and maybe I could be wrong on this, but on Watch What Happens Live, Andy was pushing her a little bit more on it. And Liz was like, basically saying that Alicia's family is pretty well off. Well, she talks about her grandfather, like, invented, she calls them pizza chips, but when I was growing up, we always called it cold pizza. It's basically just like bread with sauce and no cheese. It actually is really gross, but it's a big Rhode Island thing. And we called it cold pizza. but she kept calling it pizza chips. I don't know. Anyways, her grandfather like owned this big bakery. So Liz was kind of like, her family was like extremely well off. So even though she didn't have a home and like her dad kind of screwed their family, like she was kind of fine financially. I don't know if that adds anything context, but Elizabeth, what was your first thoughts on that?
Yeah, I feel like Sammy make a good point of trying to understand like what homeless means to Liz and that dynamic, and where you were just bringing up, Jenny, like the wealth of it, of maybe we have assumptions of homeless of like, well, you were struggling, you didn't have any money. But I feel for Alicia, I think it was just the sense of her dad took something. So emotional safety, physical safety was taken away because he took the mm-hmm. house. And yes, she had family and she had some money to support them through that many people might not have. So I think Liz was also like, don't look stupid. You have privilege. Let's acknowledge that. But I feel like Alicia was talking more about like the emotional mm-hmm. part of, yeah, this home that I was living in got taken. I had to find a new one, which thank goodness I did have. But, you know, for a kid, that's a big transition.
Right. It did feel like for Alicia, the homelessness was about the abandonment more than right. It was about like whether she had a place to live or not mm-hmm. and the emotional toll of that abandonment and, you know, what it probably what she witnessed her mother go through and having to ask family to live with them and move in. And, you know, it's interesting to me that Alicia went through this experience and yet has like found herself in a very precarious situation in her own marriage and is almost kind of like replaying like what her mother went through in being in this position of like not being married, not having any type of like financial security, home security. Like she could easily have the same thing happen to her. So it's interesting that she's replaying it since she does talk about it. Like it's such a big abandonment and like attachment wound for her that this happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also thought it was interesting. I think it was the reunion where they were talking about it, where Alicia was like, you know, it was vulnerable for me. I didn't share that part. Like Billy doesn't even know that. And I was sitting there being like, Billy doesn't know this. Like not, you know, when we talk about like things to talk about before marriage or things to talk about in a long-term
before having
relationship,
children.
Before having children is like, I might have this abandonment wound. I have this fear. So I was like, wow. Like, I don't think she's recognizing maybe until now how big this impacted her. And maybe that's why she's feeling more empowered to have financial independence. Talked a lot about the importance of financial independence and literacy, which it seems like she was going on that journey this season, which is great, mm-hmm. which is great.
I feel like for Alicia, she may be out of all the cast members, the one to change the most from mm-hmm. getting this fame because
she's going to get the housewives treatment of like, now I can be independent.
Well, mm-hmm. and I picked up what Elizabeth said, too. And I was kind of shocked. And like, she also talks about, you know, there was a few things that came up like that. I think she's been quiet on like her needs and wants. And like now the show forces you to say it. I feel like the financial literacy part felt to me very producer driven. Like they were like, you need a storyline and this is it and we're gonna keep pushing it and then you gotta do something about it. Like I don't think that conversation she had with the slideshow and the power, I don't think she would have had that if it wasn't for the show and the producers. Mm-hmm. That was like the sense I got. There was a couple of storylines, like we can definitely get into the Kelsey of it all, you know. I doubt that will come up in the reunion, but I'm sure her storyline was like heavily produced, which is part of what Rosie's upset with her about. I will say on the homeless topic, something I did see on Instagram, which I thought was interesting and well-timed, is like a nonprofit in Rhode Island was highlighting like if you lose your home and you have to go like move in with a family member, that is considered like homeless. And like they were like highlighting how many people in Rhode Island have such a situation and how that is like it is bad for the economy. It's not like you're living independently and you have your own home. Like you are just living with family members. And if that continues to happen in America, now we're having less single families growing wealth. So it was really interesting. And I mean, I feel like Liz keeps kind of doubling down on it in a weird way, where it's like, no, like everything Alicia said was actually valid. Like, yes, she was living in her grandparents' like nice house with $1 million or whatever, but like she didn't have a home of their own, and their dad, like her dad, took that from her. Mm-hmm. I'd be really interested, like, what her dad's reaction to the show was, or if he's still around. I don't know.
Well, I like that you're talking about the dolls, because I think the dolls to me play such like an interesting, because Elizabeth, you were saying like maybe she didn't recognize what a deep impact that this all had on her until now. And it feels like the dolls represent something that allowed her to not like fully deal with it. Like they become, we're talking about with Amanda and West, how like West is Amanda's transitional object. I think these dolls are Alicia's transitional object that allow her to kind of like feel a sense of like safety and security, and like allow her to maintain this like childhood innocence even into like her adulthood. And they are like something that like she can control and will not leave her and will not disappoint her. Like these are her things that she can keep in this, like in their immaculate little boxes and in their outfits. And I can't remember if she said she let her daughter play with them or not.
No, she said she doesn't. Or if she does, she has to be like super gentle or
that
whatever.
That makes sense to me, because there's something about like the way they are representing some sense of like safety and security for her, that, and then like a sense of control, a sense of grounding that I think has allowed her maybe to not fully process like this childhood experience of abandonment. Like they become this like object she's allowed to like put all of that energy into, so she doesn't have to fully deal with it. And now she's on the show, and now she is having to like deal with it. And I do think, whether it's like produced or not, this thing that's happening between her and her husband around her demanding a little more financial stability, I feel like coming on the show and knowing the world is going to see her experience and have a judgment of it, I think it is forcing her to do some like internal work around, what am I avoiding? What am I replaying? What I'm putting conscious words to something that is likely happening in the unconscious, subconscious levels. But it feels like something is shifting for her. And I think you're absolutely right, Jenny, that she is the one I can see making the biggest changes and seeing the benefits of like watching herself and having to like reflect on her life and not just like live it.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of Billy? And like, he's kind of playing this like father role. Like, I feel like there's a dynamic happening there that's not good.
Well, I feel like it's interesting. I would love to learn more about like how they got together. Mm-hmm. It's like the original proposal just was like, yeah, here we go. It's on the vanity. Go get it. I'm like, oh gosh, Alicia, you know, you're 8 months pregnant. We need something nice. But I feel like then, and could be because he's on the show, it could be because cameras are there. He knows people are going to watch it. When she does bring the stuff up, he's like, okay, yeah, like that makes sense. Really could just be because he's on the show. But I think fair, and he's like, well, let's make a plan. And I feel like the other element of like Liz and Alicia is, I think people see Alicia and think maybe she doesn't have the capacity to be responsible, do big things. Maybe it's because of the dolls. Maybe it's because she's carefree. And so I'm wondering if like Billy views her in that way too. And then the show really could be an opportunity for her to believe in herself and say, like, I do have this confidence. I can do this. I can ask for my wants and needs, for Billy to see that. But also, I wondered if that's why Liz thought she could say, no, that's not true, that wasn't your experience, because there is like a power dynamic. Mm-hmm. Alicia might be viewed as a little bit, I don't know what's a nice way of saying, like a little bit of a ditz in a loving way,
Oh, well, yeah, like no, that's a great description.
There's like an infantilized way, like with the dolls, with the crackers, like there's something very
The driving.
Yeah, she can't drive. Like there's something very childlike about her that is both really like fun and beautiful, but also I think does create an infantilization in her relationships where people feel like they can have this power over her because she kind of plays into the childlike aspects of herself.
Yes, yeah.
Both in positive and ways that create challenges.
Yeah, when they talk about the finances, Billy said something that kind of got overlooked, but he was like, kind of like, I have a trust like set up. Like because she was like, if you die, like, I have nothing. And he was like, no, like, I have a trust set up, like, somebody will, like, he was basically, I felt like saying, if I died, I have a trust set up and a guy who will take care of your finances, and because I do not trust you to pay bills and do these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got out of that. I don't know if that is the case, but like, it was hinted at. I felt like that he was kind of like, I mean, granted, he has a lot of restaurants, he has a lot of businesses. Do I think Alicia could take all of that on? No, but like, it's crazy to me that she has to ask him for money to like buy a purse. Like, that seems like a really unhealthy dynamic.
But that's what I'm wondering, if Billy is just like, I don't know if you can handle it. But then if she's like trying and gaining these skills, like maybe that we're starting to see as the season went on, would he be very much of like, okay, yeah, like we can, I can trust you here. We can figure this out more like as a couple versus, I don't know. Gut instinct is saying, I don't think he's doing it in a controlling way. I think it's the, I just don't trust her. I just don't think she could do that, which is, again, not
fair. Well, also,
either.
Like, how much of that is that, like, self-created? Like, how much is she, like, you're saying, like, presenting, like, I don't trust myself. And so then right. Why is he going to then be like, I trust you? And you're saying you don't even trust yourself.
Right, right.
And I likely feel that it's coming from a little bit of, like, both places. Like, that mm-hmm. there's both this self-fulfilling prophecy she's putting out there around like, I'm not capable, it's better to be taken care of than to have to like take this on for myself. And like, to me, it's not accidental how we pick our partners. And so there's probably something for Billy around like wanting to be in control and make those decisions and not give up that power completely or right now at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels a little like both is probably true to some extent, and it'll be interesting to watch how that dynamic unfolds and shifts now that like Alicia is going to have her own money coming in from the show, right? Like, mm-hmm. and there, I assume producers are not going to be like, okay, we're going to give up this storyline now. Like, I hope we continue to see it like unfold. And what it looks like when Alicia comes into some like internal power and like connects with her inner like adult self.
I think there could be a control factor, but I kind of lean towards hopefully what Elizabeth's saying, just because we did see such a genuine side of him. And it did seem like anytime he was hit with like, even though people were really criticizing him for the Reed proposal because it was kind of lame, but Alicia like loved it. Like, she kind of was not judging it based on like fairy tale, she was basing it off of like his capacity, which I thought was really like made me see their relationship in a different way, that she was like, oh, he's not really capable of doing much more than this. And the fact that he did that was kind of shocking. But I do kind of think there has to be some level of like a control, because that dynamic in the relationship doesn't happen accidentally. And also, I think that she's gonna change the most from the show, I also think this relationship may not last.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because I think the question we're posing about what's authentic and what isn't with him and what's control and what's not, again, as she comes into her power, how does he respond to it? Because that'll, mm-hmm. I think that'll be the thing that is either the deal breaker or the solidifier of that.
This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas, to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Relationship.
Can we break down what happened in that car ride to Boston? I've never seen like an hour car ride be that chaotic, because I feel like my impression was like Liz just felt like attacked, so she just, when she goes, she feels attacked, she just goes like nuclear. But mm-hmm. I like mostly liked Liz throughout the season, but that was a real turning point for me in the show where I was like, I don't really like her at all anymore.
Mm-hmm. I know a big storyline for Liz is menopause, which I think is great that that's getting attention. We're talking about it. I know she's like working with Dolores to make the menopause gummies. And what she's saying is very true, is the emotions, the hormones, you're a little bit more irritable, your threshold is much lower than what it has been as you're navigating that stage of development. And I'm wondering, I don't want to blame that all on like menopause, because I think there's accountability afterwards that Liz maybe wasn't doing. But I was always like, okay, I wish I knew Liz before this season of life to say, like, was she always kind of reactive in this way, or is this different? Because she might be navigating.
Well, I feel like we see a pattern of it throughout. Like, there are micro moments of this, which to me, it looks like splitting. It's sort of like, if you're on my side, you're on my side and you're all good. If you're not, the way everyone's like, Liz is my best friend. Liz is my best friend. So it feels like there's something about being in Liz's presence when you are on her good side. It is like, right? Like, it's the most beautiful connecting. You feel so good about yourself. But as soon as you shift to bad, it feels like you are on the other side of some of the demon Liz. And it feels like she's doing this splitting thing that as soon. And when we think about like splitting and where that comes from, it's a defense mechanism and meant to protect yourself from harm, usually resulting from like unstable upbringings, which is interesting because it makes me think about like why she, and again, this is all hypothesis because we don't have so much of their histories, but her reactivity to Alicia's homeless comment feels like there's some reaction she's having to the meaning she's made of like potential instability in her childhood. That then, you know, she doesn't want to talk about. There's like a protectiveness about that. So instead, she's doing some sort of like projection or transference onto Alicia in that moment.
Yeah.
Around like, no, like you had a good child. Like, almost like you don't even know what it's
right.
Hard times. So I guess I'm curious if you guys see that at all, like the potential like for there to have been deep kind of instability or insecurity for Liz that maybe is coming out in this like way she can split with Alicia and with Joellen. And even I remember like they were on that like, I don't, where were they? They were on like some camping thing. Remember, they were all in camping gear. I can't remember exactly.
Oh, I think that was the Goddard Park moment. Or yeah, there was a couple of Goddard Park moments that they pretended was like a beach. I think that's what was triggering to Rhode Islanders, although we're trying not to use the triggered word anymore, like in general. But I will say a moment in the car that I think the split two happened with Joellen was like Joellen was saying to Alicia, like, you're valid, like the feelings you have are valid. And that's when I saw like a weird turn with Alicia, with Liz and Joellen. So what did you think of that, Elizabeth?
I agree with what Sam is saying, that like it might be a very big defense mechanism to protect and I'm shut down. And Liz has alluded to that, right? Of like, I have really high walls. I am like scared to be vulnerable. And sometimes when we hear that, we might think like more inward, but it could be the defense mechanism of outward attack. I hurt you before you get the chance to like hurt me here, which I think is what we were really seeing in those moments where there is the split.
I could see that. Absolutely. Yeah. There's something with control for her, right? Like she's like either totally in control in this 1000% way or totally out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think like, I kind of feel like the menopause thing was not well produced in different parts. Like I felt like it was like a way in post they sort of backtrack to be like, maybe let's connect these two things in a very subtle way. Like I actually don't think we got enough of Liz's like background. And I actually think Liz like was protecting herself in weird ways. Like even the Dino of it all was like, what the fuck was that?
What the fuck was that story? Apparently, she may be involved. I don't know if I heard this on. Have you listened to the Legal
Bravo
Girls?
Docket. Yeah, yes, Bravo Docket. I did not listen to that one, but I saw that they.
But
did
that she, I guess Dino may be. I'm gonna butcher
he's
this.
He's being
so you can
he's being arrested
me.
For drugs or something.
For,
yeah,
for cocaine smuggling or cocaine distribution, and that she
on a boat.
And right. And like that she is kind of like implicated in all of that. And so like how much is that part of her walls? But also like how do you find yourself in that situation without coming from like some instability? Again, like it all kind of becomes more evidence to my hypothesis of like she comes from some like deep, even like not having children of her own, like how much of that is related to like coming from a really like emotionally unstable upbringing. Like there's a lot of things that feel unanswered that like my therapist brain is like so curious about and wants to ask so many questions and try to understand like where she comes from. And
well, even like, yeah, kids.
She like comes off as Italian and she's not Italian. Like there's like a persona she puts on.
And yeah. Gary's kid's mother is not in the picture, it seemed, for a reason as well.
Yeah. I did we get more info on that? Like, just that she was like, they were now living full time with Gary and Liz.
Yeah, it seemed.
Yeah, there was not.
Again,
was
allegedly seemed drug related. But like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just making that. Because I remember in Jersey, there was Rachel. Her whole storyline was similar. I don't know. Maybe I'm just making that leap and it wasn't really there. But yeah,
it's
mean,
hard when you get all these
there.
Like nuggets of information to not kind of like want to create a narrative that like encompasses them all into one.
Mm-hmm.
The rumor mill is that she may not be back next season because either her husband or a lawyer's or something is kind of telling her like, this could be bad for you. Like, don't come back. But that's like an Instagram rumor. I have no idea if that's true.
I mean, if she really is implicated in all this stuff, it's probably really smart for her not to come back because we've seen what happens when people have kind of shady backgrounds and come back. Like, eventually what's, you know, in the dark comes to light.
Mm-hmm.
And Bravo sleuths are, you know, they're going to sleuth it.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming the window that they want to stay in for Rhode Island is summer, which is love a summer.
Well, probably the weather is best to record, to like film too.
Yeah, to film their Goddard Park scenes and pretend it's the beach when it's really like a duck pond.
This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
What do we think of the Joellen of it all? Like, how did that turn so deeply against Joellen for Liz? Because that was like, I mean, that scene in Capo, whatever that club was called, was insane.
Yeah. Well, and I think, Sam, as you were saying, like, everybody's best friends with Liz until you're not. And then the highs are really high and the lows are really low. Joellen's been very open about her relationship with her mother. Now, I don't know if like the highs were highs with her mom, like if she, but as children, and no matter like, there's always a little part of us that's looking for like approval, acceptance from our parents. And so I think Liz activates a mother wound in Joellen of maybe a similar pattern. And we can unconsciously fall into these dynamics. They feel comfortable. Joellen might know the role of placating, kind of fawning around a big personality or a big emotion and knowing like what to do to stay in the good. And then when she's in the bad, like really kind of clawing her way back. And I think like the imagery of seeing like Joellen like chasing after Liz, like not kind of stopping, because it might've just been like a lot of anxiety of this person that means so much to me. I want them to understand me, which I can imagine Joellen might have felt a lot in her childhood.
Yeah, I imagine Liz for Joellen, like in the moments of the high highs, feels like the mother she always wanted. And therefore, like when the low lows happen and she's like, oh, like now it's just replaying my own like attachment traumas with my mom. Like, yeah, I think there's like an activation for Joellen around that, because it's interesting that she's like still like seems to be pursuing Liz's validation. Yeah, that's a sad story. I don't know. Joellen and her mom was really hard to watch. And I don't, yeah.
I think me and Sam texted after that scene. And I was like, that was kind of a surprising scene with her mom because she just took ownership and then was like, I'm sorry, I'll work on it. And I was like, that was so weird. Like, it was just not what I was, I guess, expecting. But also, like, I feel like the mom must have known this is coming. Like, I also feel like the women in general did extensive casting on the show for a while. I think this show was probably hard to get greenlit at Bravo. And I think the mom knew it was coming and knew that strategically her best move was just to apologize and move forward. And because at the reunion, Joellen was like, oh, there's still issues with my mom. She was like, if you talk bad about me, I'm going to, you know, not watch your kids or whatever. Like, say good things to me to Andy. Like, it felt too strategic. It didn't feel like that scene was authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I don't think the mom fully understood, like, the impact. And I mean,
Well, first she was defensive, right? Like, yeah. The initial reaction was like, no, that's not how it went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say, I like appreciate Joellen being so vulnerable and even her sister. And everybody's like, what's the deal with her and her sister? And oh my God, why am I blanking on Joellen's husband's name?
Oh, I don't remember either. Okay. Like,
I don't either. Yeah.
I was just saying, all the husbands kind of meld together, just like all the women kind of meld together.
Well, yeah, like Brian, Billy, Bobby. Yeah,
yeah. Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah. But everybody being like, why is there a weird dynamic between the three of them? And it's like, Joellen and her sister probably had been
like such codependent a trauma bond.
Such a trauma bond. And so I think it was great for them to, and Joellen have that conversation with her sister when they're shopping, and her sister is saying, like, you know, I navigated mom in a different way, but like, I see your experience. And we tend to see that children, even though you're in the same environment, you develop different coping skills, you develop different survival mechanisms. So it seemed like her sister kind of grew closer to mom, where Joellen kind of grew away. But I feel like that was a good moment for them as sisters, even if mom wasn't really understanding. What?
Yeah, it's interesting that you said you thought Joellen was doing a fawn response, because it feels like the sister is the fawner, and Joellen is seen as, like, oftentimes the disruptor of the dynamic is the one that's seen as the problem. And it feels like she's often, like, the disruptor, like the one wanting to, like, talk about things or challenge mom or be oppositional to, like, what, like, mom thinks is right.
Yeah.
And so then she's seen as the one, you need to go away, you're the behavior problem. And it's like, well, really, she's just kind of going against something that doesn't seem right. She's showing her voice, she's showing she's an individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure there's really still some internalized fawn response there.
Yeah, that Liz was the one who spent Mother's Day with her, and then that was a big discussion at the reunion. Because I do feel like for Liz, the relationship is like not important at all, but for Joellen, it is, because of this mother thing. And it is interesting. Like, I guess you can see Joellen does like a therapy and does work on herself, because the fact that she named it so clearly was like, yeah, well, that is what's happening. We don't see that often from housewives that like can actually name the dynamic when it's happening, which was a different dynamic.
But there is like a little bit of, like, to me, for Joellen, there's a little bit of a calculated.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she understands dynamics and can reflect on them. But I think there is also like an intellectualization or a distancing that she does. And I think it's probably a survival mechanism and how she's like coped with her experiences in the world and not like fallen apart. But I think part of that is it doesn't allow her to get close enough to, like, the emotions. And I think we see that playing out with her and Rula, with, like, the conflict around, like, I do think there's a part of Joellen that's, like, coming to that wanting to, like, authentically be like, I'm concerned about you. Like, this, I don't want you to be embarrassed. I don't want you to, like, go through this. And yet, like, you are directly playing into embarrassing her and making her look like that. And there isn't this, like, ability to, like, fully empathize with other people's experiences, it feels, because, like, in order to do that, like, I think I can't empathize with mom, because if I empathize with mom, then I'm saying it's okay what she did. And so it feels like there's a piece of her that needs to have a wall up and not fully, like, get into And I think we see that in the Liz moment. Liz is getting all upset and it's like Joellen isn't able to, like, even though she's really psychologically minded, she's not able to really slow down the emotions of it. Uh-huh. And so then she goes to anger as opposed to like staying in hurt. I don't know. Does any of that make sense?
It does. No. You know, it's, I mean, the thing is, like, I've, you know, the rumor mill in Rhode Island is also, like, I think going to play into more things in the show than you realize, because I think people have been coming out and saying Joellen was really out of control as a teenager, like her mom's actions were justified. I wouldn't agree with that without knowing too much context regardless, because I just don't think sending your child away the way she did was like right. But regardless,
and if she was that out of control, she seems like pretty in control now. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
I was going to say, I kind of see Joellen as taking more than Liz the lead role in the show, because I think mm-hmm. she's a really good reality star in the sense that she's smart and she knows when to pivot, but also like she's okay with being the villain when necessary. But I actually think she does have a genuine heart, because I thought that interaction with Rula in Block Island, where she came to her and was like, hey, you know, like, let's clear the air, was actually like a totally different person. Like, she was like, hey, I am genuinely, and I will squash it. Like, let's have a heart, real heart to heart. Like, she pivots for me in a really interesting way, where I think she is calculated. I think she is manipulative. I think she plays things very smart, but I also think she has a good heart, and we see all those sides of her. I would love her sister to be a full-time castmate, actually.
I agree with you. I think she has a good heart, but I think the parts of her that can be more manipulative and calculated are not necessarily like bad parts. Those are survival parts. Those are, yeah. Like, I think that's stuff she has learned to survive the experience that she was in with her mother. It's probably something she had to learn to survive being in these like behavioral institutes. Like, how do you get by without being calculated and manipulative and like knowing how to navigate, like, I don't know how bad the one she went to was, but if you see sort of like the documentaries about these different places, like, it is the only way to survive in those places is to know how to navigate the staff and the rules. And so it doesn't feel like it's necessarily coming from a bad place in her, but I do think there is sort of maybe a part of her that disconnects from it and doesn't recognize that, like, I don't need this survival skill anymore. Yeah. And it's actually negatively impacting my relationships, or could negatively impact my relationships. And that is what's happening with Rula, and maybe even with like Liz and a little bit with like Rosie too. I feel like there's some like in that first episode at that like lunch that Rosie had, and there was like, I'm going to start talking about Kelsey to like get everyone else talking, and then I like have like started a bomb that I'm saying I wasn't responsible for that.
Well, I worry that like she's gonna get like positive reinforcement for those negative reactions,
or that survival skill, because that survival skill works really well as a reality star.
So true. Yeah, well, and I think this is why I love reality TV so much, because just like humans, all humans, if we're not on reality TV, we're complex, right? And mm-hmm. we have good and bad. And I think why I like kind of analyzing the show is to show the audience that like we are complex beings. And what you're naming with Joellen is something that we talk about in session, which is, you know, two things can exist at once. We can have the parts that were like, are these good and genuine? And then we have parts that are maybe came out of survival, and we want to heal them. We want to unlearn them. And when we're kids, growing up in those environments, growing up with her mom, growing up in the, you know, the places she was sent, she had to survive. And as kids, we're like, oh, these are the models of the world. So how mm-hmm. I act here is how I have to act everywhere. And the work of therapy is saying, well, one, we want to stay away from places that might bring those things out. And unfortunately, reality TV might bring that out. But also of like,
that's not always possible, right? And so right. it's really about like, how do you integrate and understand like, where is it, like that calculation and that manipulation would make her an amazing businesswoman, would make, right, yeah. there are places to put that is really functional.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like she seems really successful, really like business acumen, and has made like a beautiful life for herself. But then she also has to recognize where that then implicates her emotional relationships and her own experience with her emotions. Because mm-hmm. I think there is a little bit of a, again, she can talk about her emotions from like that psychologically minded place, but it does feel a little like talking about emotions and not feeling emotions.
Yeah, that we're using therapy speak rather than maybe actually sitting in the emotion, doing the work there, which is another phase of healing.
Right. You know, it's so part of it. It's like step one, or right? It's part of the trajectory. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so funny because watching the reunion, I was like, something is disconnected and weird about that whole situation. I feel like you guys just put such a good name to it because it was like, I like want to like that Joellen's this self-aware, but it's like doesn't feel authentic. Like, again, it feels disconnected.
This summer, I'm taking a new approach to styling the smallest spaces in my house with help from Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has the small space solutions that America's waited 250 years for, like retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, dinner party ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish, spacious Bobopedic sofas, and feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back in even the smallest rooms. Plus, I know that Bob's styles are backed by thousands of real five-star customer reviews, so I can trust that the furniture that I'm getting is not just affordable, but built to last. And the best part? Bob's furniture ships fast, so I can enjoy my new styles all summer long. So when you're ready to ditch the furniture you're not excited about for the latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Good. Let's jump into the other girls. There's a lot of... I actually feel... I would have rather had the Rosie Joellen mother chat than the Dolores and Liz go meet a senator. Like, that scene was the worst scene I've seen in a long time on reality TV. And I have a lot of friends who work on the show, so I'm sorry, but like, I hated that scene. And I was like so mad at the reunion that like they side flashed to this great scene between Rosie and Joellen bonding that we just like didn't get for no reason.
Yeah. Why do you think, but like the producer mind of it, that they would pick that scene versus maybe the Rosie Joellen one to air?
I think there was multiple things would be my prediction. I actually don't know. So this is really just coming out of my ass, just so everyone knows, because I haven't talked to anyone who worked on the show about
No, but you know
this.
Sort of like why producers make certain decisions. Or
Bravo,
like,
Bravo is really harsh with notes. And I imagine in a first season, like even more brutal. And I would imagine Liz was coming off really unlikable. And they were like, oh, you know, we need to show more of this menopause storyline. I think it's like exactly what Elizabeth was saying, like trying to make that connection, which wasn't, I don't even think, really there, to be totally honest. Also, maybe there was some kind of prominence that they needed for this like state senator, like to get permission to film in Rhode Island or just made them look good. I have no idea. That could be. Another reason I would say is Dolores. I know that they really wanted Dolores to feel like a bigger part of the show because I think they were worried. Like, I see a lot of within the show fear of greenlighting the show, which I understand because it's very similar to Jersey, but it's also not. Rhode Island is not a prominent place that people are interested in. I think they were challenged filming at cool places. They did get that Newport mansion, which was amazing. They did film Block Island that looked freezing. They will be for Ultimate Girls Trip sending the girls to the Berkshires and Bluestone Manor, and I'm going to live for that. But yeah, I think the Dolores of it all, like they paid for her to move to Rhode Island in a summer rental for her to essentially be the background in like 5 or 10 scenes.
Okay.
I mean, it was really just a like, we need a bridge to why we're greenlighting the show, which I think Bravo should be more fearless because they've had huge hits these last 2 years doing that. But that's kind of my take on it. And then getting into the Kelsey of it all, I mean, the rumor mill is basically like, when she was cast, she was in this relationship with this guy living in this mansion, yada, yada, yada. They had broken up and then they basically went to Kelsey and was like, that was the most interesting part of your story. So can we rewind and just play this breakup like real time? And Rosie was the only one who was like, I'm not going to play ball with that. That's bullshit. because, you know, Kelsey wouldn't have been a loud story or great story if we didn't kind of see that play out for as limited as we did, because all we got was like a FaceTime and her moving into her apartment and seeing some scenes of her in that mansion. I have to imagine, because there's been so many people saying it, it's got to be true. And I totally think that's something a producer would do. I also don't think there's anything wrong with it, personally. If they cast her 2 years ago and that was her story and that was interesting, like, why can't
they? There's
still
some, like, truth there that this was her story. It's just, I guess, like, people... as an audience, like, there's an inauthenticity to it, and I get that sense from Kelsey. Like, I don't know, I have like kind of a hard time with her. I had a hard time like feeling connected to her, wanting to like get into her story, and maybe part of it is because she wasn't coming off authentic, because the way she was presenting her story wasn't how it authentically happened. It, you know, and I don't know. I'm curious, Elizabeth, what was your feel towards Kelsey?
Well, now, like, I didn't know all the behind the scenes of like, oh, this happened like 2 years ago. I heard rumors, but like when Jenny, you were explaining it, I'm like, oh, okay, this makes a lot more sense. And it also explains why like Rosie felt so upset by Kelsey's comments, because, you know, if this was Kelsey coming out 3 months of the relationship, then it's like, yeah, okay, she doesn't have these things. But it's like, oh, this happened 2 years ago. And like Rosie has this marriage and she has this, she had this successful career that she had to step away from. She has this home that she's building, all things that Kelsey maybe wanted but couldn't get in those relationships. And then maybe in the time between hasn't done it. And Rosie being like, so why don't you just focus on you? Like,
but that also that Kelsey is calling Rosie a liar, right? Like, right. That's a big part of the conflict is that Kelsey is saying, Rosie, you lie about things. And for, I can imagine for Rosie being like, well, you're lying
storyline
to you, like, you're not the most honest person, so how can you attack my character when that's a big part of like how you're showing up right now?
Right.
It was a bold choice on Kelsey's part to do that. Yeah, it's interesting. I think Kelsey's really gorgeous. I think she sucks me in the same way Nia from The Valley sucks me in, where it's like pageant girls like somehow like con me. I don't know. She also had this like brain tumor storyline that didn't really even get involved.
Oh gosh, I don't even remember that.
Oh yeah, I don't think they actually played it on the show too much, if at all, but she had like a brain tumor and almost died, and that was like how she won the pageant, because that was like her main kind of story for the pageant. The thing I think that is unlikable about her is that there's something where she owns that relationship so well and is just open about it. And I mean, oh my God, in the reunion when Rosie was like, yeah, you suck dick for a job and your other coworker was in Florida. It was like, she had nothing to say, because I feel like that is the situation. Like, yes, I'm sure she loved that guy and they had a great relationship, but like there is zero way she would have been in that relationship if the guy was driving a Honda and had a trailer. Like, it just like doesn't, like, you were there for the money and we all know it. And even with Billy, it seems like the conflict is like she knows Billy isn't as rich as she needs him to be, so she's kind of doing this slow roll out of being taken care of. And it almost feels like she's like with Billy, like, I'm about to be on the show and make a ton of money, so let me live off this guy until I do that, and then we'll have maybe our life together. But my instinct is like, Billy's never going to be good enough for her, because she has a certain expectation of a lifestyle. And I really wonder where that comes from. And
I'm
we
trying
didn't
to
get
remember
that.
Her mom. I know we got that scene with her mom helping her move in. And I'm trying to remember what happened, but it's not.
They seem normal.
I knew the story you had told me, Jenny, about like it all being kind of like a farce. And so I remember when they were moving in, all I could think about was like, this feels so like if she really had already like moved out and is now like pretending, there's something like so like icky about it. And maybe I wish I like didn't know that information, so I could have like been more attuned to what was like what they were trying to show me.
Yeah, I know. I know Jamie Stein did a video about this, too. And I mean, I don't know, because I haven't asked anyone, but like, I have filmed so many fake move-ins, move-outs, this, and I've filmed so many fake scenes that I just don't, I just don't even think it matters, though. Like, if she moved out a year ago and then is doing this again and kind of staged it, like, it happened.
Yeah, I feel like that's valid in the, like you were saying, it is part of her life and her storyline. I just wonder what will next season's storyline be, since this was the big one for her.
I do not think her and that guy are gonna
last. It didn't seem like it. Yeah.
So we all agree on that, at least. I feel like I started liking Rosie when she made that turn, like, fuck everyone. And then I was like, oh, I'm into this Rosie. Like, I really like that the characters changed. The characters, the people, the real people, like, had these evolutions this season. Because if Rosie had stayed the way she was, I would have never really liked her. But the fact that she had that twist where she was like, I'm going to burn the shit down. I was like, yes. Now I'm into, I sign up for this Rosie. The slam pig Rosie was everything to me. And her marriage is really interesting too. I like to see that scene with his family. Mm. And I'm really interested in the fact that she doesn't want to have kids and that being rooted in her mom. Like, I don't know. There was a richness to Rosie that I'm like, oh, next season is going to be her season.
Right. It got lost in the conflict with Kelsey, and that conflict just it didn't fully make sense to me, how it began, because she didn't post a picture of or tag Kelsey in her. I didn't really I'm curious if you guys understood where that conflict started and why. And it was hard for me to interpret exactly the dynamic that was playing out, because it felt like maybe it was in the editing, felt really choppy, and it felt like Kelsey came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it felt like Kelsey needed a storyline. It didn't feel authentic to me. I felt like Kelsey was like, let me pick a battle with someone so I can have more camera time.
Yeah, because I even remember being like, I'm not really sure how we got here. And also, people don't have to like each other. I think that maybe they just decided we're not gonna vibe, but we're on this show where you have to interact with these people. And also, I think I always try to think about what does the other person bring out, right? Because we project or we have these reactions. And I mean, Rosie and Kelsey, one of the younger women on the show, both had careers in spotlights of pageantry.
And they look very similar.
I
love how Andy was like, I couldn't tell you guys apart.
I could not either. Now I can, but it took a while.
Yeah. So I wonder if that was just bringing out, again, it could go back to Rosie has these things, Kelsey doesn't.
There's a competitive nature.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think just from the jump, they decided we're not going to vibe. And that kind
of
took
I think it was
there.
A personality clash. Their personalities didn't meld. And then Kelsey was like, because of that, let me jump on this. And because she kept making these moments. And I actually really loved Rosie's reaction to the police speaker thing, whatever the F was happening there, because it felt really real. Like, everything up until then kind of felt like Kelsey was just trying to get her attention to fight with her, and obviously that was too. And Rosie was like, no, actually, you think this is funny, but you're embarrassing me, my neighbors, and da-da-da. That felt genuine. That's why I kind of turned towards Rosie, because everything she was doing felt real, and everything Kelsey was doing felt for the show. But I have to say, Kelsey was very good at, her showing up with the sash.
Yeah.
And Owen, oh my God. It was, I mean, the reunion, we have just full disclosure.
Well, I feel like
only seen
Kelsey's
one part of
so
the reunion.
So performative. There's such because even when she did the whole megaphone, she was like, no, I was genuinely meant to be funny. And it's well, no, no, that wasn't meant to be funny. And it all feels in the everything she does, she kind of doesn't take full accountability for what she's doing, which then makes her seem super performative.
So I really liked Ashley on the show, in the sense that she's the outsider and she's sort of the voice of reason. I know that she comes from Bachelor Nation. I'm kind of interested more in her relationship with Jared, just because I never watched The Bachelor, and seeing the clips, he rejected her for someone else, and then she was crying, and I was like, wait, how did they end up getting together? I'm also, it's really funny, the whole coffee shop of it all, it's insane to me. that Ashley thought within a year they would open this coffee shop and it would make, I guess, somehow tons of money. And then just like, it just seemed like Ashley didn't ever want this coffee shop, because you need to have a coffee shop for like significant amount of years before you could call it in. Like, why she would think after a year of leasing a coffee shop, they would just give it up. Like, you got to commit to a business. So I don't know. I am interested in her coming back because she kind of plays a really good role in the show. And I'm interested in her marriage more. But before, unless you guys have thoughts on Ashley, let's get into Rula.
Rula la la.
Because that's a dark hole.
Yeah, I have very
show.
Little thoughts about Ashley. I do think it's, you know, her use of crying does feel like something that again, similarly to Joellen, feels like this survival tactic she probably learned at a young age to get like the attention or the affirmation that she needs or wants in a moment that I could feel would wear on me over time.
Yeah, I have followed Ashley and Jared through the Bachelor storyline. And so they have like, they have a good spot in my heart. It's nice to see them. I think they're good for reality TV because they know it. I would be more intrigued about like their marriage, but Ashley is a crier. And
having seen them on The Bachelor, do you think their relationship is like solid, or do you think? Okay, you do.
I think in the sense, because there was a lot of, it was very tumultuous in the beginning, but they really did build like a foundation of friendship, which I think like carries them through here. So like they have all of that background. And I don't think we saw Jared in like the most stressed version, right? He's at the coffee shop. He's trying to work. Ashley's coming in for a quick minute. They're having a combo. They're navigating the kids. I don't think it was like the best representation of their marriage, but I think it is an accurate of like they have two young kids, he's trying to have this business, she's filming the show, she's unsure what there's fear of what the coffee shop's gonna do. So Jared in the marriage, like I feel like that's an authentic version of their chapter of life right now, but we'll see what next season brings for them.
This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas, to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
So, Rula and Brian, I mean, and I don't even know about the Joellen and the mistress. I mean, there's just such a dark hole of the mistress and the rumors and the things. And I just can't really, I just think this is truly like an abusive relationship. It's giving Jax and Brittany, and I actually don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
There's a darkness there that feels hard to watch. And yeah, just I read somewhere that they think that there was like they had a like non-ethical, consensual, non-monogamy type agreement prior to the show, and that Rula kind of was like, no, now that we're on the show, you can't do that anymore, and told him he had to end the relationship, which I guess kind of believe with like some of, or I don't know how ethical it was, but there was some non-monogamy agreement they had. Based on like the level of like denial and like the way she presents in response to any information about him being like a cheater or him being having these affairs, it feels like this information doesn't feel new to her.
Well, it's tough because I wouldn't agree with that. But then when the producer was like calling out that she'd been divorced before and she like didn't want to, I was like, wait, there is a side to Rula that's like lying and withholding things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. When Brian told this
story,
she's
so manipulative, even like getting sick and being in the bed with a full glam, but saying I'm not well. Like, she's calculated in ways that still feel like survival, but feel like the calculation is calculated, if that makes sense. Like, there's a darkness to her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that Brian said the way he got her was basically like,
plied her with drinks.
Yeah, that was really dark.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, I know is like we haven't learned a lot about her, but I think why she's like so interesting is because the scenes where we're not talking about Brian, and she's just Rula, right? Like, she's a businesswoman. I know she's had like a conversation with Alicia of the importance of like that, having that financial independence, having those conversations with Billy. So then that doesn't really align with kind of maybe how or the marriage is, how the marriage is being navigated. And then we see like this completely different side of Rula in the marriage, especially in the first part of the reunion where she was so defensive, so like Joellen couldn't even breathe without Rula making a comment. So then I'm like, oh, attachment or romance, relationship dynamic brings up all these parts of Rula that maybe her on her own, they're not there.
And in full disclosure, the second part of the reunion airs tonight, so we're recording this before that. I don't think we're going to get too much more other than Brian is going to give his side of the story, I guess. I don't know if there's a three-part or this is only two-part reunion. I was getting the sense it was an only two-parter. But
it sounds like his part of the story is that, like, the videos, someone put in a fake date. Like,
but then Jared was telling him, like, just tell the truth, like, tell, like, so, and he did in the finale admit, like, yeah, I've been doing all this. So I don't know. It's like, and Rula must have seen that. I think also for me, Rula must have known, or at least could have suspected, that this could be bad for her marriage. The whole tracking device,
there's like an NDA or like, the mistress owns part of some company. Like, this is so complex. I feel like I wish I understood it more.
But like, to me, with the Rula part of it, there feels like there's an abuse that we're not seeing, in the sense that, like, if she thought her husband was tracking her, which is very much a form of abuse, obviously, because he was arrested for it, which I think
it's illegal. So.
Well, yeah, I really pride Rhode Island domestic violence laws, because most states don't have laws like that, just like from the get. And that could really be a huge indicator, having worked in true crime, of like, you know, escalating towards violent potential murder of a spouse. And his tracking is like a very harsh, abusive tactic. And the fact that she knew he was doing that, and she suspected it, and instead of just confronting him, she went to like a car dealership or whatever. They sent her to the police. She must have known going to the police was going to have some kind of consequences. Maybe not that he would be arrested, which, I mean.
But she must have not felt safe to go to him.
That's what I'm saying.
What I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, because now I'm thinking about like Taylor Armstrong and like her relationship, and I'm wanting to like do some comparisons there between Brian and Russell, and the way like Russell would present and the way Taylor would defend him when they were together, and then as soon as they were apart, she would behave a little bit differently. And so I'm seeing a lot of parallels there now that you're bringing that up.
And like, I mean, could we have imagined all the shit that was going down with that? Like, I didn't really, but I guess that brings me to a good question for both of you. It's like, should these people, I mean, even just like, okay, let's just say we don't allege, we don't think about anything else that could be happening, but with the tracking alone, that is domestic violence. Do you think these people should be on the show? Because I will say, like, Taylor and her story probably helped a lot of people and was very, you know, compelling reality TV that was real. But now that we're sort of, you know, been through a lot on reality TV, we know like the story. Should these people be on the show? Like,
yeah. Well, even with Rula, like, into kind of similar what you brought up with Taylor Armstrong, of, is this like a call for help that she cannot do herself, but maybe subconsciously is like, okay, if the audience sees this, or if people see this, or, you know, whatever it might be. So
I'm no longer alone with him. Now I've got like the whole world.
Everybody's seeing. Yeah. And so it's like, well, that's great if Rula has like that safe space. But then for people like Brian, and think about like Jax Taylor, which obviously they rectified firing him from in the Valley. But I do struggle, because it's like, why are we giving Like, why are we giving them platforming?
Yeah. Normalizing it a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even with Russell, like, did he commit suicide because of the show and the exposure of the show? And I don't know, like, you know, protecting, you know, it's not our job to protect him, but he's still like a human who had a daughter, and now his daughter's impacted by the fact that he committed suicide.
And we'll never know. But I feel like it couldn't have helped. I wouldn't have. I don't know if I would have thought he would have done that without the show. And here's the thing: need to give Brian a platform to clear his name and say his piece. But at the same time, like, you, like, in reality TV rules, like, you kind of do. That's what makes me think they shouldn't be on the show, because I don't think he should have that platform to clear his name or say anything. Because what he did is a crime. You cannot track your wife with a tracking device on her car.
Right. If anything, he should use the show to, like, take accountability, acknowledge his wrongs, and, you know, show us that he's going to change or be different. It's the fact that he's trying to clear his name and gaslight everyone by saying, like, no, you're putting fake dates and stuff on, like, that tells us, like, oh, this person is only doubling and even, like, gleefully at the dinner saying, like, you know how me and Rula met, I made her drink a bunch even though she didn't want to. Like, you're telling us who you are, so we're gonna believe you.
And the fact that Rula stays with him, I don't think is a good look.
Well, I you know, working with people who have been in, like, domestic violence relationships, I'm aware that it's not easy to leave, and that those cycles are really, like, I don't know, you know, again, I'm don't know that it's a domestic violence relationship, but if it is, and that is what we're seeing, it makes sense that it's difficult for her to leave. Like, those are not easy situations to get out of, whether it's because of financial abuse, whether it's like in domestically abusive relationships, the one partner really isolates and makes the abused partner feel like they don't have the sense of self, the resource, the ability to leave. And so it does take a long time.
Well, so maybe
like you're saying, the show is maybe providing her with some resource to eventually get out of this situation.
Well, it's almost like Jax and Brittany. If Brittany had stayed with Jax and maybe he wasn't on the show anymore, but she's still with him and she's on the show, would we be okay with that?
I think if they didn't have the Valley, they might still be together.
Yeah.
Probably.
I think the Valley exposed it and people were like, ooh, this guy is terrible, to the point that Brittany could no longer, like, ignore or make excuses or, in, you know, be in relationship with it. And I wonder if that show didn't exist, if they would still be together.
That's a good point. I think my other thought, too, with, like, having people like this on the show is it, and I don't know all the behind the scenes in the producer world, but, like, sometimes I'm like, is Andy the best person to navigate these kind of conversations, or do they have supports? Because this is a heavy content, right? Of, like, do they have someone that maybe is a little bit more trained or skilled in assessing or at least leading the combos?
Yeah, I mean, I think in early days of reality TV, there was pretty heavy psychological evaluations and things that had to go down. And I feel like as time went on, we lost a lot of that. And then the reality reckoning was like a moment that kind of dudded out. It is an interesting question, because where does the show have responsibility? And in, like, a case of Rula and Brian, I would say that it does. And it concerns me from many standpoints, because if they have someone to support her in the background, does that person appear on the show? Because now we're intervening in reality, and, like, we want to keep the documentary aspect of it.
There has to be a line, though, to
there
that.
Has
like
to
I'm
be
thinking
a
about
line.
The Below Deck episode where they intervened in a potential sexual assault. And had they not, and just let reality play out, like, I think there is a responsibility if you're there to not allow harm to happen, right?
Like, and it concerns me. Yeah, it concerns me that Brian is tracking her. I think it concerns me that he's being exposed. I think he's probably been doing this behavior for a long time. And who knows if that's, like, you know, the exposure of that is also his business. It is giving me Taylor Armstrong. Like, Russell punched Taylor Armstrong in the face so hard it broke her face.
Yeah. I worry too of like, great in a way that, as we were saying, of like, now everybody can kind of see Rule is not alone in it, but can that make Brian's reactions more intense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, can it escalate? And that's the fine line of, it's okay, we have support, people saying, oh, we see Brian, Rula, you deserve better. And Brian, I hope not. But that's what we can kind of see in those circumstances, is maybe an escalation.
Yeah. And like, again, we're not alleging any physical abuse because we do not have evidence of that. But psychological abuse is could be potentially just as harmful. Get into the final questions, because that was a dark, dark turn.
Dark place.
Yeah, I don't know how Rula and Brian, you could talk about it without it feeling really dark. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess they kind of standing up for each other in the reunion. We'll see how that plays out. Final questions we always do, Elizabeth, is like, do we think these girls are good for reality TV? Do we think reality TV is good for them? I'm just going to answer both of them and then throw it to you. I think the girls are amazing for reality TV. I was super skeptical about this show. They have captured a really unique part of Rhode Island. I love their interconnection. I do not think we need Dolores to sell the show. I think that, you know, many more seasons and more Slam Pig, more You Were Never Homeless. I love it all. And do I think reality TV is good for these girls? I think it's a mixed bag. I think financially it'll be good for all of them. I think if Rula escapes her husband, it will be great for her. I think Kelsey is going to make a brand of her own and probably be successful in that. Rosie, I think, is a star as well. Joellen, I think it could be bad for her if she embraces some of these negative sides of her, because it gives her a lot of attention. And I could see her being like a Lisa Barlow, Lindsay Hubbard, where it's like you're going in the wrong direction at times. And so I worry about that.
Reinforcing
for her.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to be really good for Alicia, because I think she does have self-esteem issues, and I think she shouldn't. And I think having her own money and autonomy will be really good for her. So I throw it to Elizabeth. What are your thoughts?
I have very similar thoughts. I think that the show is really great. I think, and why it makes it so great is their long-term friendships. And so really happy that it didn't feel like they just mixed people together and were like, pretend to be friends. Like, there's history here, which we can really see the genuine connections, and also why the fights might feel so intense, because there is so much history. So I think that is good. I would agree. We don't need Dolores. I think the women made a name for themselves in the show that we're all looking forward to season two. If they are good, so if good reality TV is good for them, I also would agree. I think the financial independence and the self-esteem for some of them would be really great. And I always think about Heather Gay, where she was like, I watched Real Housewives, and that's when I learned like I could have a different life. And so I think the platform really gives them an opportunity, but it's what they do with it. And so I hope that, you know, I fear, same with Joellen, of like, I hope that she can kind of continue healing to have those integrated now awareness, be more authentic, have that be real. I hope we see a little bit more of Ashley. Alicia, I hope we just see more confidence come out. Rula, I don't know. We just never really saw her. So hope either if she continues that this is like a safe space for her and maybe she can like pull away. Kelsey, I think she was like, she's a pageant queen. She knows how to play the camera. So I think that works out well. So, and yeah, Rosie too. She's a star in itself. So I think they know how to move forward. Liz, unsure. I think we would need to do some accountability in order for her to grow with the audience a bit for next season.
Yeah, I think the only two I'm concerned about are Rula and Liz. And I think with Rula, it's really about the relationship and, you know, how that's going to play out both for her and for the audience. And if that's good and safe for us to watch, good and safe for her to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And with Liz, I think there's the legal concerns, right? Like, I think that's really what I'm worried about for her. I think I'm okay with her coming back and still being reactive and seeing how that like plays out more. Especially like I think because she came in as like the matriarch, and each of them, especially Alicia, has gotten like a lot of fan like favoritism. And I think that will demote her from her matriarch role. And yeah, it's interesting that you brought Heather Gay in and from that perspective, because I'm thinking about like how Heather Gay came off as so authentic in the beginning and has slowly become less authentic. Yeah. And I always get, it's sad because I think like anytime there's a long-term show, it's hard for that not to happen and not to like be aware of the demand to show up in a certain way and to like prove something and create a story. And I think it has been a challenge in general with them creating these newer Housewife franchises or recasting franchises, because people are so much more aware of you have to have a storyline. You have to like prove something to be here, and it takes away from like the authenticity. And the season felt like very authentic to me. And so I think that's a concern, that I hope they all stay in authentic places and don't fall into like the demands of like proving something.
Yeah.
I don't know about Rula coming back. Liz obviously might be up in the air. I do think she's a little bit older than all the women, which might prove to be a little weird anyways. I do know that they are casting new women. Potentially Kelsey's friend might be joining. I think we will see new women next season, but I'm assuming they're going to start shooting very soon. So yeah, I'm interested to see where it's gonna go. I think it'll be really good. I love that they just greenlit a second season and they're just going with it. I mean, I feel better about this than I do Real Housewives of New York, so
that's fair.
So before we wrap up, we gotta address the devastating news of Ladies of London being on pause.
Elizabeth, did you watch Ladies of London?
I did, and I was captivated by it.
It was my favorite show in such a long time.
Yeah, I know. I am so sad.
I mean, it was a hard sell because anything overseas, I mean, Dubai suffered the same fate. Yeah. It just needs such a level of success to justify the budget, I think. But I don't even think that was the issue. The rumor mill is that Margot is suing Bravo, and that's why it's on pause. Okay. Which I have to say,
her Instagram has also gone missing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Her Instagram has gone missing. Also, that's what happened in Real Housewives of Miami, because Alexia's maybe husband, maybe divorced husband, whatever, is also Todd. Suing Bravo. The fastest way to kill a show is for someone to sue. So I have to believe it's true, but until we have more facts.
Right. We don't have it factually. It seems really true. It's devastating.
Yeah.
And that,
I mean, if that's true,
at the same time that we lost Hecate.
Hecate. Yeah. The bird drowned.
In a tub.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So
wow.
How does a bird drown in a tub?
Yeah. That's the whole point of Wings. That's so sad.
And so we're in deep grief. It's hard. It makes me want to quit Bravo a little bit. Because I'm so looking forward to seeing more of them all. And I feel like Real Housewives of London is going to be like not as good.
I mean, I'll watch it because people have said it, whatever. But, and I liked Juliet.
Yeah. No, I'm going to watch it, obviously.
But we're dedicating
this episode to Hecate's.
Oh, the bird. R.I.P. Hecate's.
And to our ladies in London, stolen from us.
And our one gentleman.
Yeah. Our one gentleman. I'm devastated.
Devastated.
Otherwise, Next Gen NYC is back. I'm obsessed. I don't know if you watch, Elizabeth.
I do. That was a good one. I felt like they laid a good foundation in season one for season two to really pop off. So looking forward to that.
And I love how they're just like noting all the scandals right up top. They're not shying away. They're not playing coy. They're like, these are the scandals.
I think Amira being such a focus, because she was kind of a dud last season, was a little weird to me. Like, maybe it's because Riley wasn't in that first episode. Charlie is full on giving, like, I think
that's part of why she was chosen, because she keeps Charlie relevant to the rest of it. And Charlie is an integral part of, like, drama.
And oh, yeah.
Without her, how would Charlie make sense? Because she was the only one who Charlie still had, like, a connection with.
Yes. Yeah. It felt like it was more of a strategic choice than, like, what fans would choose. But, Charlie was giving me hard, like, Jeffrey Epstein vibes without the pedophilia. Like, what I found so interesting about the Charlie storyline was definitely, like, how he kind of, like, attaches himself to rich people to, like, kind of me.
Well, who was that woman
them?
Who pretended to be an heiress? Oh, that's yes. who I feel like he gives me vibes of. Yeah. Anna something. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Del something.
Anna Delvey, yes. Yes. That's, I was like, he's like the male Anna Delvey. He just attaches himself to rich people to enrich himself, which is interesting because he comes from such privilege.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. The Jeffrey Epstein emails, the part was very interesting to me because obviously everything with the girls is so horrific. I can't even like get into that. But like how he really like, I mean, he was talking to like some of the biggest, like Deepak Chopra, Bill Gates, like, obviously Prince Andrew, like the way he would manipulate these really rich and powerful people, and that's basically how he got rich in the first place, was like very interesting grooming. And like, not the Charlie's at all that, but like he is just openly like, that's how he's kind of like a classic New York City scammer, and I like love that.
Well, it's like Charlie's too much like of a petulant little like child to like be on the level of like manipulation.
But what's interesting is like his dad is like one of those rich men. So it's clear that there's like a connection between like him kind of manipulating these rich people for his own like benefit to his relationship with his dad.
Right. And the daddy issues coming out. That's an interesting connection.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we'll do more next gen. But I guess that's what we're sustaining on, because like everything else is like sort of wrapping up. But thank you so much for being with us, Elizabeth. Do you have any last words for our Bravo fandom?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I kind of forgot we were filming a podcast. I just thought we were yapping. So that was so fun. Thank you so much. But love the Bravoverse. And if you feel like you want to psychoanalyze a little bit more, you can follow me on social media. We'll be covering Next Gen, not Bravo, but I was doing Love Island over the summer. So we might have what you're looking for over there.
Definitely check out her content. It's good stuff.
I'll tag everything in the description so you can easily find her and follow, especially Love Island content. I'm like the only person on the earth who doesn't watch it, so we have not discussed it on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge commitment.
It is. I'm tired.
So follow along so her hard work is not wasted. Tune in. We are open to suggestions for next deep dives. This was our last one on our like list.
Planned, yeah.
So yeah, if there's things you want us to dive into, I wouldn't mind doing someone from the city. In the city. I keep calling it the city, and it's called In the City. Anyways. So put in your requests and we will check it out. Follow us on Instagram. All right.
Thanks, y'all. Bye. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you guys.
This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas, to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.